why would we bother doing a podcast?
I don't know.
Yeah, we think about that a lot. just be a print artist? Better. Leave a comment that's hashtag this is awkward.
Hey guys, this is Mike Tiener, creator and writer of Black Jackets. I have another book that I co-created with Alex Madej that's up on Kickstarter right now called Midnight Highway. It's an Alice in Wonderland ride through the supernatural when a teenage boy stumbles upon a mysterious road. If you're a fan of 80s horror, Twilight Zone, and Stephen King, then you owe it to yourself to give us all your money. Make sure you do that, or we'll finally release that starving ghoul that's been living in your attic. And you know that ghouls will eat anything, but they prefer human flesh. Hey, I didn't write the rules. I'm just playing by them. Check out the campaign immediately after you listen to the podcast. Thanks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Beards and Comics Podcast. We are so excited to have you with us today. We have Mike Tiener on with us, and we get into a conversation about, kind of background in comics and some stuff that maybe has just been building up. So this is a brutally honest couple of weeks for episodes, and we can't be more excited to share it all with you. So if you guys are getting into the comic book industry and indie comics, there's a lot of stuff here that's, stuff you may not even think about or have discussed yet, but, learn from our past. It might just help you in the future. But here's our discussion with Mike. It's a good one.
Well, Mike, first off, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Yeah, so this
holding
show...
up in this crazy world.
Oh, just keeping yeah. No, I never got the option to quarantine. I've just been working this whole time, so world didn't really feel like it changed for me because most of what I do is drive places. So I stayed on the road through all of this. Oh, nothing changed.
There you go.
Yeah, we were out of the office for about 2 months, and then we've been back since May. So, watching the world pass us by. So the show's a little bit different. I know we have a couple of different things we're doing with you, but for this, Matt just disappeared. That was cool. For this, the show is more so people that are either getting into indie comics or have been in it for a while and just kind of behind the scenes of what it's like being an indie comic creator and, experiences and all that stuff. We can really just start at the semi beginning, not like life story, but, a little bit about like your background, who you are and, how you got into comics.
Okay. So I grew up in Southern West Virginia, which is not really a hotbed for comics. I had a couple friends that, love superheroes as much as I did as a kid. So that started at a very young age. You know, I grew up on X-Men series, the animated series. That was like the launching pad for me, really. That's what kind of sprung me into the interest. And then from there, as I got older, I got out of it. You know, I didn't really follow comics for a long period of time. It wasn't until I got to college where I had a friend that really pulled me back in. He was reading this great comic. He's like, hey, you got to read this. It's called Walking Dead. And that was my introduction to a black and white book. You know, it was the first one I'd ever read. And I was just kind of amazed at how well the story held up. And after that, I just asked him, hey, what else can I read? And so he started pulling me into Image and seeing all the unique indie titles that were out there and getting a lot of traction. So, there was this big gap. And then as soon as I got pulled back in and realized that there's this whole community out there that isn't Marvel, isn't DC, isn't Dark Horse, I started getting really interested in maybe seeing what I could do to contribute. So that was really the interest in making comics started with realizing there was more out there.
Yeah. So how long have you been making comics now?
6 years.
Okay. Yeah. So a little while. I just recently learned about you too. What's wrong? There's something wrong with that picture.
to be fair about that too, is I had really slow momentum in the beginning. I just kind of dipped my toes in it and just tried to see, if this was something that I was going to stick around and continue to do, because it's expensive, right? I think you all know that.
Oh yeah.
So I was trying to make
very, very well.
Very yeah, well.
I'm amazed that you guys are still indoors right now. I think at this point, after so many years, I've got a couple cardboard boxes ready to go if I need to move into them. But
that's right.
It started with me just kind of, and I didn't pick my best stories in the beginning. It's kind of a tough thing to admit, but there was a lot I didn't know. So I didn't want to waste it on my best ideas right away. You know, I saved all that stuff back because I wanted to know the process. I wanted to understand what people were going to appeal to, or what was going to appeal to people, rather. So I wasn't really serious into making comics until maybe the last 2 years.
So that's okay. Yeah. Well, you're around here in the comic book realm. So how long have you been doing like campaigns, Kickstarters and all that kind of stuff?
That's 4 years. One of the first books, 4 or 5 years, I'd have to go back and look at that, but, you know, one of the first books I ever made, I kickstarted issue 2 of that series, and then I took a big break and then started kickstarting newer series in the last 2 years.
Okay. Yeah, because Matt just got something.
I just got my package from you.
Good. You're welcome.
Black Jacket. That Black Jacket's number 1 and 2, and my patch. I'm pretty stoked. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So you've actually been a discussion piece in a few different occasions, because we both read Black Jackets, I think, the same day or the same night, and I read them back to back, which I never normally do. Usually I start reading when it comes to comics and setting aside time to read and stuff. It's, as you know, it's difficult, but that one I actually was like, oh well, now I need to read the second one. So like I said, you've come up in a couple of different occasions. In fact, we've done a couple of different shows where your name has come up too. Somebody had asked us a question about, what was the question, Matt? Because you're the one that said.
Well, we did a live, and somebody said somebody else that needs to be more prominent or get more reputation for their name, and your name came up, and we were like, oh, we all know about him. we just read Black Jackets. So that's, you know, I think your book stood out to us. I think that's why it actually did make an impact, where a lot of the indie stuff that you read, it's just like, oh, okay, yeah, this is pretty cool. But yours was actually like, I definitely want to check more out what this guy does. So definitely kudos on the writing.
Ego boost today, you know. Yeah. My fiance is not going to be able to deal with me today, man. I'm like, do you realize who you're talking to right now? I'm not taking the trash out. You're taking the trash out.
Exactly. Thank you very much. It just happens. Because basically what happens is, you know, we get influxes of different creators, and, you know, you read everybody's stuff, and you can really start seeing the difference between people that write because they have to write. Like, you know, it's a feeling that I get from you. It's just a part of who you are creative-wise. And then you get that other side where it's like people that write just because they're trying to do something, like they're just trying to go somewhere else. And so it's like a passive thing. So I guess we gravitate more toward, you can tell the difference in passion. So I think that's what gravitated us toward your writing. And so we're looking forward to the next thing you have coming out, which we'll talk about that too, because you got to pitch it. We don't make you do a whole bunch of 30-second pitches for everything.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, but for everybody that doesn't know Black Jackets, give them kind of a rundown of like what it is, how, where they could buy it. You know, is that next book coming out, or, you know, what kind of plans for that?
Okay, so it's a 6-issue limited series, black and white art. About a group of kids who are stepping into their parents' shoes as monster hunters. Their parents belong to an organization called the Black Jackets, which is a fraternal organization. There's been 4 generations of these monster hunters so far, so these kids would be the 4th generation. And so they're a little young, they're a little premature, they weren't really ready to step into the role. However, all the parents went missing on the same day. And so really their motivation right now is to figure out what happened to their parents, and then also fulfill the responsibilities that the organization bestowed on them. So there's this balancing act between the two things, you know, their personal desires to find their family, because it's all they have. And then this lifelong oath that they knew that they were going to have to fulfill ever since they were really small. So that's really the general idea behind the story. And obviously, gives me a great platform to have a lot of great monsters, a lot of unique creatures and different types of threats that, I think, will be really exciting to reveal as we go through each issue. So a little long winded, but that's,
No, I could tell. Podcast. Like
you could literally go as long as you want.
Yes.
We just edit. Just keep it in. It doesn't matter. We have long episodes. That's cool. Yeah. I could tell you definitely like between that and your new book, you're definitely more of like the. Are you into the horror comics? Is that something that you really gravitate towards, or is there any like is that your favorite genre that you're kind of in love with that you love doing, or is there something else that you are you kind of all over the place?
I'm all over the place. I'll be okay. honest. I could do anything, you know what I mean? Like I love all genres. But you know, when it comes to comics, you know, like I said, I read a lot of Image titles for a very long time, followed Dark Horse for quite a bit. You know, I was mostly reading a lot of superhero comics along the way too. You know, I didn't really let go of that love of that universe, you know? So, horror movies was really the inspiration behind some of the more recent books that I've been doing. Just a love for 80s horror, early 90s horror, even modern horror has influenced a lot of the more recent projects that I've been working on. There's two more books that I'm working on too that I haven't really shown anything yet, but they also have elements of, you know, I don't think I'll ever make a book that doesn't have monsters in it, I'm starting to realize. So, even if it's a rom-com,
that's what I was wondering. I was wondering if you're going to do It's like, and so a bunch of superheroes and a monster.
I can't help it. I don't know how I get there all the time, but I always do. So, I think horror films was the biggest influence I've really had on anything that I've made in terms of comics.
All right. So who were your inspirations for that kind of stuff? Like your horror genre inspirations?
I don't think anybody, if you don't mention John Carpenter, then something's up. Because that guy had the greatest streak of movies in the 80s. So he's in my opinion, he's uncontested. So I would say him first and foremost. I'd say David Cronenberg films also. You know, he had a good stretch in the 80s as well. I'd say those two primarily. Would be probably my biggest influences in terms of writing, especially with the book that I'm co-creating with Alex Madej, Midnight Highway, which is on Kickstarter right now. That one absolutely is just dipped in those influences.
That's 100% the most 80s book I've seen in a while. 80s horror. But it's good. It's the good stuff. Yeah, it's what you like.
Yeah. We've talked about the art quite a bit.
The artists on that book, I wish I could have brought Alex on for this. It didn't occur to me because I didn't know how much we talk about it, but every time we get a page back from those guys, if it's just the inks or if it's the colors, we're just talking about it all day.
That's one of my favorite parts of doing this stuff is like when you get that page back.
It's like Christmas every time, man.
Yeah, it really is.
I don't think I'll ever stop making comics just because of that feeling. You know, there's a drug. It's a drug.
Yeah, man. There's that bit of self gratification. We say we write for everyone, but it's really just because we want to see pages of stuff that we dream up.
That's it.
Yeah. So I mean, we're big on that as well, and so we've commented quite a bit on the artist on that book because they're really doing a fantastic job. You're coming on the Beards and Comics Live, so try to get Alex to join you on that if he can. I left a spot open purposely for him in case he can get on there. That was more of the easier side. So I guess let's talk a little bit more of the creative process side. Because it's something that we get asked a lot about, whole lot, is just how we approach our stories. Since you're a writer, I guess we'll talk about more of that. So Matt, you can, you know, just tune out. I'm just kidding.
All right, I'm gonna go on mute, guys. Artist out.
But yeah, give us kind of a look at how you come up with stories and how you bring it to fruition.
Okay. That's, man, I wish I could tell you there was a formula or a format or I had a process, but
it all starts with a monster.
It does. I draw a monster while I'm on the toilet. And I'm like, I think I can do this. I think I can. Toilet monster is up next. So I will tell you, like, some of the, I think it always starts with a name for me. I think of a title. That's the very first thing, because I think if I can say the name out loud and I'm already intrigued, I think that's the pitch. So, because if you think about it, you're going to be crediting yourself as the writer of this, this, and this. That's the first thing anybody sees about you. So right. If those titles are very attractive, then people will start digging a little bit deeper. So it's always a title first for me. And then from there, I start building around that. Like, hey, what does that make me feel like I'm about to read? And so Black Jackets was very much just a very, it sounded like an occult or a clique or a gang. And that was really the basis for that. So I started thinking, well, what would be interesting? You know, what would make sense there? So I just started building more and more around, you know, kids. You know, it seemed like a rebellious, you know, Black Jackets makes me think rebellious. So I think kids, and then started creating the personalities of the kids and, you know, how would they be rebellious in different ways? So I build the characters next. And then I think about the conflict right after that, like what's going to make them congeal as a group, or what's going to make them break up as a group? You know, what are going to be the things that motivate them to unite and break up? So all of that, basically motivation, finding out the character's motivations, what's the drive, what's the conflict. And then really, I write the panel work first and then go back and write the dialogue last. I kind of visually imagine what's going to happen. And then that way, you know, the dialogue, I can substitute it and change it however I need to because the art's already done. So I think that's a little different from other people since I've talked to friends.
Yeah. I just recently, someone started a group chat on Facebook, and it's just for writers. And it looks like it's a lot of people that are just kind of getting into stuff. And so a lot of their conversation is about processes and trying to figure out how people do stuff. The way you just described is very similar to the way that I approach storytelling as well. And that motivation thing is something that I think a lot of people look over, and it's something that I noticed in that chat that a lot of people look over is they focus a lot on either a character development or a world building, but they're not answering that key question of what motivates each of their main characters. I think we could get a lot stronger stories if people ask themselves that, because that kind of brings apart those other sides of your character development and your world building, because now you understand exactly where their headspace is for each of those characters. It's interesting. I always like hearing different perspectives. We did a writer's roundtable with a few writers a while back now. Ones that are in like our little realm. We had John Schlimm on there and Travis Gibb and somebody else. I don't even remember anymore. Martin Piero, I think, was the other guy. But we kind of talked about that. And it seems like everyone does kind of have a little bit different of a process on stuff. It's kind of fun to see, though. So how do you, Matt, did you have a question?
Oh, I was going to say, so for your, do you do more like that Marvel style where you're kind of just giving them, you said you do page layouts first. So for the artist, like what does a normal panel description go for with your scripts?
So for me, I think less is more in the descriptions of the panels, because you got to trust your artist to be able to tell a story. If you pick the right artist, they're already a storyteller. So right. I'll give a very general action or description or emphasis. So, okay. Hey, this needs to be in the panel. This is not the breakout panel or the bold panel. I'll usually indicate that, like, hey, the emphasis is going to be on this panel on this page if it's necessary. But I'll just include details that should be in the panel and then any expressions or actions that are important. So I keep it very, very loose. And a lot of times what happens is, and I'll just talk about Black Jackets. Francesco Tomaselli is the artist on that. I trust him, so I don't really feel like I need to over dictate what should happen. He understands the characters really well. And so he can kind of help tell that story just visually from his end. So that's that's basically how the panel descriptions go. Okay. Maybe a sentence, that's two sentences in length at most.
Have you, did you start out that way?
You know what? Like, not necessarily, but I was never over verbose. Like, you see those people that just have, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry. If I was in
the Northeast lighting. Is coming from the broken window with shades and the mood is damp.
You're almost assuming that your artist is not a visual person like that.
Yeah, it's just a very dangerous choice to make.
Now
have you worked with
man, that's the thing. Like, you gotta really think about that, you know. They're the storyboard artist, they're the cinematographer, you know. That's
it changes too the more that you work with a specific artist, because you start kind of understanding each other more, and that trust that gets built, because then they'll flip you something like, hey, I had a little bit of a different idea for this one. And you're like, yep, that's why I hired you as the artist.
You just described me and Francesco. That's exactly. He has changed things, but for the better every time.
Yeah. Thank you.
Now, have you worked with other artists that the first book, you're kind of feeling each other out of how it's going to play and the back and forth. But have you had people that have said, hey, stop being so descriptive, or hey, can you be more descriptive? Or have you worked with enough people, right? This might be, you know, have you worked with enough people that you're paying them enough to where you know they already know what they're doing, so you don't really have to worry about it?
Yeah.
Like, have you worked with any like super beginner artists, like on your first book, like you said, you didn't want to put maybe too much money into it, you're just trying to get a story, see how it works and understand comics, as opposed to, okay, I'm just going all in. Even though I don't like the story, I'm going to have amazing art and amazing, you know, while you are learning that stuff.
Yeah. So that's a loaded question. I'll be honest with you. I'm just going
to
say.
Well, I don't have to say anybody's name.
Yes.
It's exactly all why people
all
of
that. Yes,
show,
to all of that.
Okay.
Because they want to know that stuff.
Yeah. I'll tell you real quick, though. So I didn't know, like, obviously, first time you do something like this, I'm sure it was the same for you all. You didn't want to screw up, you know, because you're still trying to gain confidence and get momentum. And this is still, you know, you don't know if you're going to stick around and keep doing this. So the artist that I first worked with, his name was Sika Murti, and he did the first book for me under the story called The Dragonfly. And it was just a superhero story. And he was a nice guy. He was great, but he did exactly what I told him to do. You know, like, he didn't really venture off too much. So then what I'd realize is that I didn't give him enough detail or enough context. So I'd get a page back from him and I'd say, oh, well, you know, I need this and this and this. He's like, well, that wasn't in the script. So then I'm like, oh, great. I have to direct more than this. I didn't realize, you know, so that was my introduction to working with another artist, is that they needed a lot of direction, a lot of detail, which since then has changed, because I've learned to find artists that will help build and create with you, not just someone that's just waiting for instructions and only doing what they're told. So you got to find an artist that's motivated by your story, that actually has a love
your story.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, and you don't really think about that always. You just assume that artists just love to illustrate whatever. I've always told people to do is look for an artist that already draws the stuff that you want in this book. Like, when they're just free, when they're not being paid to do something, what are they drawing in their off time?
And it's a lot easier now with social media to see, do these people post about the projects that they work on in a way more than, here's a page I did for something, but more in a way of like, hey, this is something I'm excited about. I mean, that for us, because we've had those encounters with people where it's like, you, once you look them up, you're like, oh, well, they're not passionate about anything. It's just a paycheck. And unfortunately, that's just not our personality types to do that. We want people that are going to get kind of invested in what we're trying to put out, because we don't want to work with people just one time. We would like to feel confident to work with them more than once. I know, as you know, getting into stuff, there is still that whole beginning time period is all about like, who am I? Nobody knows me. and kind of feeling out other people's personalities and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's the same way with artists. When I first started working with Aaron, it was, okay, I'm going to do exactly what he wants. Because I feel like it's respecting the writer. But then once you realize, oh, he respects me enough too that we work together. And it's just like, oh, I've got this idea. So let me go ahead and flesh this out. Maybe the pacing is a little different, or I had an idea for this, and it just makes the story better because you're both collaborating on it. But, you know, as a first time artist working with a writer, I know that's, you know, a lot of people that listen to this, like that's their first, you know, we have those artists that come in and go, basically like they want to know what a script breakdown looks like, or how much playroom do I have? Well, it's, you know, it's kind of all depending on, you know, if you work with two people that are cool and want to work together for the best product, you should have no problem. But you have to talk to the writer and be okay to say, ask questions, you know, don't be scared to, you know, that kind of stuff. So
I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's one of the books that we're working on right now is with another writer. He wrote The Legend of Everett Forge. It's a steampunk Western book. Scott Wilkes' name. Great guy, great storyteller. I think that, you know, if you guys were talking earlier about people that might not be on the radar yet, I really feel that's him, because if you just really read the way he writes his script, he's very clever. He has witty banter for all of his characters, but you know, either way, you know, he's awesome. So he's working on a book with us. And one of the things that we started with in the beginning was there aren't any bad ideas. We did a group chat with the artists. And our editor, and we all just said, hey, just everybody's opinions on this. We're going to build this story together since we're all going to be investing this together. So all we did was come in with a premise, and everybody liked the premise. And then we just started building the story of the character, the motivations, all that stuff together. I think the artist is more invested in the book now because they're a part of the story, not right. just there's no barrier there. Everybody's a storyteller in this book, so I think that's kind of really helped motivate everyone, and it's there's been a lot of activity. Like, we've moved a lot faster than I thought we would with the book, just because everyone's so invested now.
Yeah, it also
I think that's so important.
It also pays off to be nice. it's such a simple thing that I think I see it get looked over a lot, though. I really do, and it's unfortunate, but there's a guy that Matt and I are working with on something, and it's like it's one of those things where it's like we just will post something encouraging on his on something that he posts on something else that he's working on, and then like a day or two later it's like, oh, I just knocked out this page. Like, it's like, oh, well, that's motivating for you, that's awesome.
Yeah. Celebration, recognition, I think those are probably the number one and number two things, right? You know, every time you get something back, it's the greatest fucking thing in the world. Oops, excuse my language if I'm not supposed to cuss, but
it's just one button that I have to click. Okay, but yeah, go ahead.
Right. oh my God, you know, you're the greatest person in the world. This looks amazing. I think that's one thing right away, because they want that. I mean, you got to think artists are entertainers, right? So they want response, they want accolade. And then the other one of that is, you know, promote your artist, because on a dime they could get discouraged and give up, and you don't want that for the community. So that you need to keep that artist in the community. So you should promote them and recognize their work, even outside the work they do for you.
Exactly.
Yeah. I will say, when you're dealing with artists, as an artist, I'm not the normal artist. Like, I've come to terms with, like, it's you just do it. But it does mean so much when the writer you're working on goes, dude, that page is awesome. Like, it's that little bit of extra that will make them want to jump on that next page quick and get it done. To just be like, instead of just sending them a page and going, cool. Yeah. Like, just that little, like, oh, I really like that panel. That came out awesome. Or, like, it was what I was thinking. You know, like, I don't know how it is for you guys, but, you know, it'd be the same thing as somebody reading your book and going, yeah, I read it.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Or going, like, you know, when you could tell they actually enjoyed it, because they sit there and point out different spots of it, and you get excited from them being excited. It's the same thing, you know? It's just like, oh, that one part of Black Jackets when that monster came out, and you're like, yeah, the monster, that's what I was talking about.
Yeah,
this is my monster. You know, it's that kind of feel, you know, like it's just that back and forth of like boosting each other up and like, hey, I can see your artwork's getting better, or dude, I really like the way you wrote that dialogue. It helped me describe this panel even better because, you know, I could read the dialogue and feel it and have those conversations in your head, or, you know, even like you do where you kind of give them that freedom to, you know, freeform whatever. But like that stuff's definitely a big helping point for artists to just, dude, I like it. That's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, we like to give the appearance that everything's been great always. But what kind of difficulties have you had, difficult situations, difficult people that you've had to work with in the past? And let's just all been, you know, fantastic and you've never had any issues ever.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I think you'll experience everything if you have enough time, right?
Right.
I think, wow, I guess I'd have to just try to list my top three. How about that?
Let's do it.
So, one of the toughest things that I went through was I had a book that I'd worked on where a guy was accusing me and a co-writer of plagiarism. And he harassed our Kickstarter. He harassed us on social media. It was awful, man. It was a really bad deal. And so it was like stressful for us because we never knew the guy. We never saw his work before. And to be fair, there really wasn't any direct comparisons between the stories. It's just in his eyes, there was. So he was a bit, we would put him on the delusional side. Like there was probably a mental health issue there that we're not sure of. But either way, this guy was super active and aggressive. So that was intimidating for us because it was the first time we realized, you know, actually, we should probably start trademarking our shit, copyright stuff. Like we're going to have to really start thinking defensively here in the future when we start doing projects, because that's out there. So we had never come across that before up until that point. And that suddenly was like a big shake of reality for us that, right, you know, if you ever did really get successful with a property, if you don't have what you need to really defend yourself or protect your work, I mean, there's real risk out there of losing something you put a lot of time into. So there was that. That was a big one. Number two, having to switch artists because I had an artist that fell off and lost contact with, and 6 months, no response, no answers, not sure what happened to him. And I had to move on and start a book over with a new artist. So I had half a book done and I didn't want to switch the artist in between the book or in between the pages of the book. So I had to start back at the beginning. So I had to pay for more pages.
I will say, I'm going to go ahead and say kudos to you for actually starting over. I know that sucks, but reading wise, you did the right thing.
Yeah.
It's because awful. You know how jarring it is to go from one artist to another in the middle of a book. And even Marvel and DC, when they do that, they're just like a couple pages. You're like, what? I just got pulled out of the story.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. I'll never forget. There was an issue of Daredevil and it was the strangest thing. It was, I'm going to have a hard time remembering the timeline or the storyline, but I remember when Daredevil beat the crap out of Kingpin and declared to everybody that he was going to be the new Kingpin. And there was a page that was like a very painted style. And then the next page, there was a very cartoony, almost classic comic book style. And that's when they're fighting. And I thought, is this a reference or a callback to a previous issue when there was another artist that did it? Was this something, was this an artistic expression? It was, no, they lost the artist that they had on the book and substituted with another artist. So
was that a newer run?
2000s, because it was right around the time I started getting back into reading books again. I'll find it and send it over to you. But just off the top of the head, just you bringing that up, I remember that specifically being that moment where I was like, oh, this is awful.
Yeah.
You know, like, like, I can't do this.
Yeah, because you get used to the art. Like, even if you start reading a book and go a few pages in, you're like, ah, this isn't that good. But then, like, once you flip through four or five pages, you're like, okay, I kind of stopped analyzing everything and I'm just invested. And then out of nowhere, it's like, oh, here's a mural painted.
Yeah.
Like, what? And then it goes back and you're like, oh, it's so jarring.
Yeah. It is weird. So that, I'd say those are, I think everybody probably as creators probably ran into really tough situations like that, I guess, in some way, shape, or form. But those I mentioned two, and honestly, instead of top three, I'd say top two, because those are the two that really strike out or stick out to me as the biggest challenges I ever had so far.
Oh, yeah.
Other than money, other than being broke.
Oh, well, right. Yeah. Anyone listening to this should know all about that.
Yeah. All right, so let's rip that Band-Aid off. And how's Kickstarter?
Oh, man. So it's doing better. It's doing better. Yeah, right. I mean, like, you stress the whole time, right? Like, Kickstarters are really fun, too, in a way. There's always that anxiety from them. But there is... You know, first off, the Kickstarter is going great. It's doing a lot better than we'd anticipated it. It's been running for about a week, actually a week on the day now. And it's already funded and we're starting to aim towards stretch goals now. So we're good there. But there's always this feeling of, well, we've got a lot more time now and I'm not sure what else we can do to motivate and elicit even more support than we already got. You know, because we're just going to be showing a lot of the same stuff that we showed to get everyone hyped before the launch. So what else are we going to show people or even talk about for the next 30 days to get people interested? So, like, I've thought about shaving my head, you know, for him with the box. I mean, like, just we're thinking of just everything. We're whoring out our bodies for this, basically. So we're really not sure where we're going to land. We looked at KickTrack, and I don't know how reliable KickTrack is. Did you guys ever use that to kind of...
Yeah, I've looked at it, but it seems like it's something that they said it's only people that have used stuff with KickTrack before that it's calculated into. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. It's cool, like, because it is cool to kind of see where things fall. But yeah, I don't know enough about the back end of it on how it all works. But yeah, I checked that list like I'm checking stocks. So
that's my first time doing it. I never really looked at it with any past projects on Kickstarter. It was the first time that I did it. And I think that's mostly because of Alex. So, you know, he was sending it over to me. He's like, hey, you know, stats wise right now, based off of how we've been moving every day, we're going to finish at 22,000. And I was like, well, if that happens, then, you know, I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to live like a king for 2 months, you know?
Yeah, but, it's always funny on that part, too, because we had the same thing. Like, we when we did Welcome to Everville a couple months ago and we launched and we funded and did really well in the first week. And I think it was about that same. It was about 22,000 that it was kick tracking toward. And we were just cracking up because we're like, yeah, that's just not even assuming that. First off,
stop lying to us, internet.
Backers, yeah. How many freaking backers is that?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
And so it does that, but then they don't consider like your whole dead zones and that kind of stuff too. So, so then it just gets depressing the more you look at it because it's like it was 22,000.
I'm failing myself. Yeah. I mean, you could be happy
it's
about
like somebody goal, putting it
disappointed that you didn't achieve that goal, you know.
That's... Yeah, I mean, and if you check the list too, it's nice to see your name on that top whatever list that they have. So,
am I on that?
You might be. If you have like a really good day, typically you're going to end up breaking that top 20, which is under the comic book section.
Yeah,
in reality, none of us.
Did you guys get the projects you love?
Yeah,
seal of approval.
We got it on this one.
See, that's awesome.
Yeah, that was exciting. That's really good. Black Jackets number one got it, but Black Jackets number two did not. So I was like, well, screw you guys. But
isn't that because it's like someone on the team at Kickstarter, they liked your project, so they're allowed to put on like this project. Yeah. Where'd they go? They must have gotten fired after the layoffs.
I don't know. Well, you know, I guess, you know, it made me want to design a better campaign for Midnight Highway. So that was.
Yeah. I was going to ask about that, too, because you guys did something different and it's something similar to what Matt and I do for our campaign videos. We don't just go about it doing here's a picture of the book while we talk about the book. You actually put more effort into it and did a narrative style. Which is something we're really big on because I think it does set you apart. What was the inspiration behind going that route?
I saw, I had a friend, Shane Morrison, had an animated project video advertising his Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. And it made me want to get his book. And it, and, you know, the premise and everything's not necessarily something that always attracted me, but watching the way that this project video laid it out, it sold me on the tone of it. So I pursued the guy that made the video. I just messaged him and said, hey, I'm absolutely interested in you doing something similar to this. And, you know, we basically had a lot of material for him to work with. You know, I sent him the master file, the master Dropbox file of all the artwork. So he looked through all that and he came back and he said, first off, I'm a big fan of this stuff the same way you are. So we talked about, you know, 80s horror a lot. We talked about, you know, all the synth wave we listened to and retro wave or Outrun or whatever genre of music you're listening to out there, but basically video game music, right? And I kind of let him do his thing. I didn't give him really any instruction. The only thing that we did is the music was recorded by a friend. So the music in the project video was done by a friend. And that was supposed to be just a theme for the book. And he did that a year ago. And mm-hmm. I just approached this guy that did the project video 2 weeks ago. And then the voiceover is another friend from college who is going to do the radio show for Midnight right. Highway. So he did that voiceover nice. Section. And so we gave those two elements to the guy's name's Jared, by the way. Prevalent Mind is the studio. We just gave those two elements to him and said, hey, we'd like you to use this song. We'd like you to use this voiceover. And then you can use all the imagery that you want in within that. And then he created that whole narrative through that whole video. I gave him no direction on anything else. So yeah. he did amazing.
I like it, man. I like seeing people do stuff that's not what you normally see when you click on someone's comic book Kickstarter. But we're big on that stuff too. We just did a full like voiceover trailer for the Tilt 3 one. It's just, I don't know. It's more, I think it lets us stretch our creative legs too in other avenues and in other ways. And it's always fun to see stuff come together, no matter how it comes together.
Yeah, I'll need to see that because I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah.
Send me the link after.
It's a cool looking campaign.
All right.
Yeah. And in fact, the other thing I really like about the way you built your Kickstarter page, I wasn't even planning on getting into all this stuff, but the other thing that actually stuck out to me is the way you did the story section of the page, where it's very single image kind of going down. Yeah. I like that a lot. So I think that might be something I adopt later on.
All the best ideas are stolen, you know, I guess take it from the guy that harassed me about plagiarism. But like, so, but the thing about it is honestly,
it just looks
someone
good.
Told me once that white people don't like to see white backgrounds, and that's why they have a dark mode on phones.
Yep.
So ever since then, it kind of stuck with me that I need to make sure that I avoid as much white background as possible on a Kickstarter campaign to keep people interested in what they're reading and looking at.
Okay. Yeah. So what was your first Kickstarter? When the first one you ever did?
The Dragonfly issue 2.
Okay, and
you
that
should
was
find it on there. Yeah, it should. If you follow me on there, you'll see that as one of the projects. But that was, I'd say, about 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay. Yeah. So what has changed on Kickstarter as far as you can tell?
You know what? That is a tough question. I'm not sure. I feel like I think I've learned a lot about the tools that have probably been available on there and wasn't utilizing them correctly. So I think one of those was I didn't realize you could bullet point the rewards. I thought you had to write them all into the body of each reward. So I think that right. was something I did with the first campaign, and then just realized I could save myself a lot of time just by, you know, pre-building all the rewards. So there's that. And then not realizing, how much you need to communicate with, your backers, you know, mm-hmm. when someone backs you, it's normally a courtesy to give them a private message and tell yep. them, thank you. Yep. Haven't done that at all yet. You know, it just started dawning on me that that's something I should be doing. Hey, thanks for your money. You know,
like yes. <that's>,
you know, you could be spending this on a lot of things, but you're spending it on me. So thank you. And I guess that was something that I just never really thought about. So a lot of the customs, I guess, of Kickstarter is something that I've just started to learned more about as I've backed more and seen how other people have ran them. I think that's probably what's changed about Kickstarter from my angle, is how other people have evolved through the process. So I'm starting to try to, you know, like you said, steal ideas and take things and make sure that you get all the best ideas for your next campaign.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt, what you got?
I like that idea. Steal it. Aaron, write that down real quick. That's usually what we do. We just sit there and go back and forth and like, well, I mean, that's kind of how you have to do it, though. You sit there and go through, like, we have sat there and said, let's go look at successful campaigns, see how they lay stuff out, see what they're doing that we're not doing, and, you know, see if we even like that idea or if it would work for our project, and kind of like, you know, you kind of Frankenstein together a Kickstarter at first, you know, and kind of see where you're going with it. Like, that's definitely helped us out a lot. So
you kind of learn too what kind of rewards work and which ones don't, right? I think that's another thing.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's one of the things we did is we're like, hey, let's give all these people this really cool stuff. Hey, well, that really cool stuff costs money. So
yeah,
how bad are we gonna screw ourselves over?
But you don't
because
even
that's
even
something
register,
we learn.
But it doesn't even register mentally until the campaign's over and you're like, crap, I just realized what people are getting for $10.
Yeah.
Like our last campaign, they got like a special edition variant that was only for the campaign where we like hand splattered blood on the cover. Oh, wow. And it not actual, but we didn't kill anyone.
Yeah.
No. Whoever's listening to this. But yeah, and then they got like a enamel pin because that was one of the stretch goals that got unlocked. And there was like, there's some other stuff. We realized for $10 that was the most stuff we've ever given away.
Yeah. Which is great for everybody that supports you. And I'm sure they're back again, you know, for the next one, but probably a little disappointed when you pull back on some of the stuff you're going to give away.
Yeah, we sit there and find those good deals and we're like, oh, it's only X amount for this. Mm-hmm. Oh, we could put that into it. And then we're like, wait, we got to ship it.
Yeah.
Dang.
That's why we were talking about that. I tried getting a hold of Alex here, but we were talking about it just a few days ago because we came up with the stretch goals. And man, there's one that I wish I could talk to you guys about because we think it's like going to be the freaking coolest thing. We'll probably not get to 10,000, but if we do, holy God. But anyway, we talked about these stretch goals and we were like, well, it's got to be something that we can still ship in a mailer. You know, like it's got to be stuff that hardly increases the weight, you know, doesn't require us to use a box or something like that. That's the most important thing. You know, the cost of printing is usually not that bad, you know, so that wasn't the issue. It was just how you ship it right now. You know?
Shipping is nuts right now. It's more expensive than the products.
You need to run a Kickstarter just so that you can ship your book to Europe.
Oh, for sure, okay? Man.
Like that's a fun thing. Yeah.
Now, do you feel that shipping turns a lot of people off? Like once they get, like, say you get a book and it's, you know, I mean, how much do you guys usually charge for your shipping stuff? Like just a book. You guys usually set a $5, $10, you know, like.
Yeah. Well, I try to keep it low.
It varies.
Yeah. I try to let the excess amount that I get from the Kickstarter be there as a slush fund for shipping, right. You know? So, because shipping charges could probably, they're more apt to go up than down. So.
No.
Yeah, right. So. I said it like usually a single print's usually $2 or $3 depending on the page length. Then, you know, if it's rewards, I kind of do a flat amount of $5 because I usually can fit most rewards in a Gemini mailer. I don't know if you guys use those or not. Yeah. Cardboarded.
We just experienced how much we could fit into one last time.
Dude, they're awesome, right?
Dude, we sent one of the guys. He got like 20 copies of the book. So I was like, let's see if we can do it. Yeah, we did it. No problem.
Yeah, it's nuts. They're great. I mean, they're not cheap, but you know, you could probably fit in enough that's under a pound and still save a lot on shipping costs.
I mean, pro tip is partner up with a store that can order for you.
Yeah. Mm.
That's what we did.
Gotcha.
They just added ours onto theirs and we just paid them directly. So.
That makes sense. Yeah. I'll have to think about that. Cool. Thanks.
Yeah, go to your local shop and say, hey, Let me get in on that diamond order.
Yeah, let me. I know it's coming up. No, seriously, though, you really should ask your local shop because, you know, they use them anyway. And it saves a lot. I'm not going to give actual numbers because that might be weird for this, but it helps is what I'm saying.
I don't doubt it.
Yeah. But yeah, shipping our stuff, it was one of those like, oh man, so much. But then you don't want to hit the person that's getting it with that. Hey, listen, if I actually charge you what it's costing,
yeah, like,
you just probably won't even back me, like just for a single book, you know, because it, you know, like if you can't get that media mail, you know, it's gonna be $7-8 just to ship a book.
I had a guy when I ran the Black Jackets campaign, the first one, I'm not gonna say his name, but he's a pretty well-known writer, pretty popular, doesn't live in the United States. Messaged me and said, hey, I would have backed your book, but it just cost too much to ship to my country. And I was just like, well, there's a digital tier. There's a PDF that I will not cost you anything. I can ship that to you. He didn't back that one though, obviously. But I think, when I got that message, I was thinking, man, I don't know if I would actually message someone and tell them that.
Yeah.
It seemed kind of odd, I thought, but at the same time, maybe they were telling me that because they wanted me to know that I should probably consider lowering that cost. But that shipping cost was completely based on the United States Postal Service quote. Like,
yeah,
it is
nuts to ship to like the UK. Yeah. It is nuts.
Yeah, you can't get it.
We just did it. We just did a couple, and we were like, "Good God!"
I will go ahead and tell people, if you live in the United Kingdom, it cost us $24.50 to ship
a book,
like two books. The two books and then like the few little rewards. So just to let people know,
man, that's just I feel bad.
I'm gonna say this,
but yeah, we feel bad asking. Hey, we want to sell you this book that, you know, would be like $5 if you bought it off of us, or like, but also like we need like $25 for shipping.
Like, to be fair,
you know, like it's crazy. Like,
but to be fair, it's the same thing as if they were to order a comic from any like an eBay site in the US and get it shipped out. It's going to be the same thing. But I'm going to say this for all of us, if you guys are international and listening to this, just because we can't ship you the physical one without it being an insane amount of money, doesn't mean you don't just back the digital one and be nice. My God, it's like what, $5?
That's kind of what book. I thought too. I was
we
like,
just you want know, you to read the book.
Yeah,
just read this book. And tell your American friends about it. All right, I'm getting off my soapbox.
Okay. well, you needed to say it, so I'm glad you did.
It does,
Mike. Bother. If you didn't want to say it, we'll say it for you, man.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I don't have the spine, man. So, but okay. No, honestly, it did. I was thinking, man, like ethically or not ethically, I don't know how you'd characterize that, but like. You know, just courtesy wise, you know, I would never say that to another creator. You know what I mean? I would be like, hey, I would have done this, but you know what I mean? I would have just not said anything, you know, or would have just said, hey, listen, the shipping costs, help me understand why it's that much. And maybe, you know, I might actually back it, but I'm just wanting to make sure I'm not paying you too much to ship it. You know what I mean?
I'm going to tell you what happened on our last campaign. If the guy listens to our podcast, look, I'm still upset about it, so I don't even care.
But
we had this guy that backed one of our bigger tiers that was not even eligible for international shipping. And then after campaign ended, he was like, oh, I'm in the UK. And we were like, what? And we were like, dude, you got like, what did he get, Matt? I don't even remember which
campaign. He got the shirt bundle.
Yeah, he got like one of the t-shirt packages. And we were like, dude, are you kidding us right now? Like, you back. First off, how'd you get away with backing that tier? So I don't even know how he did that. But then to privately message us and be like, oh, by the way, I'm in the UK. Man, we fulfilled it. So he better freaking enjoy the crap out of that book and all the stuff in there. But, dude, for people that are listening, like, just be nice to us. This stuff is expensive. Yeah. It hurts.
So long to make these books. And then somebody be like, it's really hard to like once you get the book and realize, hey, I made a bunch of them, but like, I think this show is one of those things where it's like, I know probably a lot of the people that just buy the books aren't listening as much as people that want to get into it, but is obviously from our point of view of how much time it takes us to make the book and the effort that goes into it is way worth more than $5 that we ask for, like, or $10 for a book for even, something.
Even the irony of like, okay, Mike, how much has been the most that you've made on Kickstarter so far?
Five.
Okay.
Yeah.
Close to 5K. So with that 5K, you were able to quit your job and do this full time, right. And
and live a lot.
I mean, I told you what I did for 22K. You know, I'd push every family member out of my life, and you know, I would just move to Mexico, get a yacht. I guess I don't know what you do with that, but yeah, you do it. 5K does not. I mean, you know. I kind of went into it with the mentality that I'm not doing this as a business. I'm not doing it to make money right now. I need to make sure that people actually, that I have a following, you know, that I actually have people that really want to see what I do next. And that takes time. So it's a slow burn, I think. Yeah. I think you're really campaigning for yourself more than you are the book. So, you know, the books... You know, the goals that I have on my books are not what cover the cost of me making the books. I'm doing that out of pocket. I'm paying people to read my stuff. I just would need help with the
printing. Did you hear that, people? Yeah. We are paying people.
Is this thing on?
We're paying you to read our books.
Yes. Yeah. I'm not ashamed to admit that. I don't want to sit here and lie and say, oh, man, I have people buying my books every day. I need to send you pictures of what I shipped out today. And, you know, here's what's going out tomorrow through, you know, the post office. You know, I'm not going to do that stuff. I know that this is not where I'm going to be making the money. This is just about really just, I want to make sure that when it gets to someone in the mail, they're actually going to read it. So if that means that, you know, I make a lower goal so that way I can afford to get this thing printed and shipped to you, then I'm going to do that, you know. And if I eat the cost of making the book, well, you know, maybe over a long span of time, it'll break even. But
yeah, it's building towards something. None of us are just crushing right now.
There's a couple out there that are, though. I mean, there's some campaigns right now that are cracking 10K, and I'm thinking, whoa.
Still, I mean,
what are they doing? That is it for this week's discussion with Mike. We'll be back for the episode next week where you can hear the other half of this conversation. Really right off the bat next week, we get into some, I'm going to call it reality checks with Mike. We hope you guys enjoyed this and come back next week. Check out the rest of the conversation. Beards and Comics Podcast is a production of Catalyst Comics Studio. To find out more about Catalyst, go over to catalystcomicsstudio.com, or if you want to get involved with the Beards and Comics discussion,